Derek, I should probably start out with a word that if I look like my back hurts a little bit, it's because my back hurts a little bit. Yesterday, I was at a weightlifting competition up around the Cleveland area, the Battle of the Great Lakes. In powerlifting, you get to do three exercises. One of them is the squat. And did you know that there's a new American record in the squat? And who gets it? There's a new American record in the bench press, and you know who has the new American record in my age and weight group in the bench press? And in the deadlift, which is the other exercise you do, you bend down and you pick it up. It was just set 3 weeks ago, and I feel really badly for this guy, whoever he is. He did a 444 deadlift. Yesterday I did a 455 deadlift, so you know who's got the new American record in the deadlift? Dawn will tell you her back hurts too, just sympathy out of watching people deadlift.
Did you guys hear that correctly? I'm not sure if that came out correctly. Your lead pastor, what are you, 76?
And getting older all the time.
your lead pastor bent down and picked up almost 500 pounds. I don't know. I just wanted to highlight that happened because that's crazy. And I have a video of it on my phone, so if anybody wants to see it after worship, come find me. I'll show it to you.
Jesus said, "Beware when people speak well of you, because it's easy to let it go to your head." So I'm trying not to let it go to my head and stay grounded and humble. But I do admit that Jesus was right. It's hard. Palm Sunday is the day when Jesus entered Jerusalem and everything was going his way. He could have owned the world. They were ready to make him king. But this is also a reminder that that didn't last real long. That by Thursday, the tides had turned, and it's of some of the things that happened on Thursday. Thursday evening, Jesus had a last meal with the disciples and then went out to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. And what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about what happened between Jesus and the disciples as they're finishing up that last meal. From the Gospel according to Matthew chapter 26. "Then Jesus said to them, 'You will all become deserters because of me this very night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go ahead of you to Galilee.' Peter said to him, 'Though all of you become deserters because of me, I will never desert you.' And Jesus said to them, 'Truly I tell you, this very night, before the cock crows, you will deny me three times.' Peter said to him, 'Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you.' And so said all the disciples." This year we've been preparing for Easter through the season of Lent by following Peter, taking a closer look at how his faith develops as he spends time with Jesus. He is the one who Jesus says he will give the keys of the kingdom, and he even calls him a rock, the rock on which he will build his church. In other words, Peter was Jesus' right-hand man. We started out, Peter was a fisherman. He'd been fishing all night one night and hadn't caught anything. And Jesus meets him and challenges him to throw his net out again into deeper water. And we ask the question, where does your faith need to go deeper? Where do you want to go deeper in your faith? A week after that, we talked about how Peter was out in a boat again with the disciples. Jesus wasn't with them this time, but Jesus comes out walking across the water in the middle of a storm to the disciples. Jesus tells Peter, "Get out of the boat." And Peter gets out of the boat. And he starts walking, but then gets afraid and starts sinking. I ask the question, what boat do you need to get out of? Where do you need to take some risks? We talked about a time when Jesus was at Peter's house and his mother-in-law had a fever. Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law and asked the question, where do you need healing? There was a time when Jesus asked Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" And I ask the question, who do you say that Jesus is? Who is Christ to you? Last week we talked about forgiveness. Peter asked Jesus, "How many times do I have to forgive? As many as seven times?" And Jesus said, "No, that's ridiculous. Not seven times, but 77 times or seven times seven." In short, Jesus and Peter have been through a lot together. Peter has come to know and to respect Jesus. Now Jesus is in Jerusalem and things are going to get really difficult for Jesus. It would be a great time to have a friend who would stand up and be there with him through it. Has there ever been a time when you've been through a difficult time where there's been somebody who's able to go through it with you? Yesterday, as I mentioned earlier, I was at a powerlifting competition up around Columbus. What I didn't tell you a minute ago, though, is that about 2 months ago, I was training and went down in a light squat and ripped a quadricep right in here, a lateral quad. What was really strange is that I felt the pain, a real stabbing pain right here, but it actually got black and blue up here and down here. So for the last 2 months, I haven't been training like I was going to, like I had hoped to, and I really had visions of going down with a 300-pound squat and feeling it rip the rest of the way and not being able to come up. So yesterday was a really kind of a big deal for me to get through it okay and not kill myself. What helped? What helped get through that? Well, one person was there that helped, and can you guess who that was? She's in the back holding a grandbaby right now. Her brother and two sisters were also up there, and that really helped. She spent most of the time texting and on Facebook posting what was going on, and so folks were saying words of encouragement, and that really helped. It's a reminder, I think, if you know somebody that's going through a difficult time, is there a way that you can be there to be with them through it? The Sanhedrin was the local governing body at the time. It was a group of about 70 people who were led by the chief priests. Usually, they didn't meet during Passover, and so the fact that they're meeting during this Passover says that there's probably something a little underhanded going on. It would kind of be like city council meeting on Easter Sunday. Remember, Jesus had gone out for a last meal, and then he had gone to the Garden of Gethsemane, the Garden of the Olive Grove, to pray. Roosters tend to crow really early in the morning, so what's happening here, this trial that Jesus is being subjected to, is happening sometime probably between midnight and 5 a.m. That should tell you that something that's not really supposed to happen is about to happen. It would be a really good time for a friend to step in and be there to be supportive of him. Peter must have been feeling like he should have been there because he wanted to be close enough to know what was going on. He wanted to know what was happening, so he was there in the courtyard outside of where the Sanhedrin was meeting, but wasn't actually standing up for Jesus. Jesus had predicted that he would deny him three times. There in the courtyard, a servant girl came up to him and said, "Didn't I see you with Jesus?" And you know how he responded? He said, "I know. I don't even know the guy. I don't know what you're talking about." Peter moved a little bit further away out of the courtyard and onto the porch. There was another servant girl who came up to Peter and said to her friend, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." Peter didn't want that rumor to keep spreading. And so do you know what he said to that servant girl? He said, "I do not know the man." Now what he's doing is not just a one-time mistake. Now what he's doing is developing a pattern that he's fallen into. The night's almost over. The sun is about to come up. A group of bystanders recognize Peter because he's got an accent. They say, "You sound like that guy who's on trial in there. Do you know the guy?" And Peter says, "I have no idea who you're talking about." What do you think was going through Peter's mind at that time? Do you think he was just not thinking? Do you think maybe he was afraid of his own fate? Do you think maybe he was trying to protect himself? One idea that I heard was that he had been told that he was the rock on which Jesus would build the church, and so if something happened to Jesus and something happened to Peter, then there would be no church that would come after that. So maybe he was thinking about the future of the church and just thinking ahead. Have you ever known somebody who really needed somebody to be there for him, and you weren't there for him? You wish you had been? Have you ever denied another person? Have you ever denied God when you should have? It's not just a river in the Africa. Denial is something we all experience at some time or another. When Derek's shaking his head, I know I shouldn't have used that line. We all sometimes deny people when we ought to be there for them. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is a person who studied the stages of death and dying, and one of the things she suggested is when somebody we care about dies, we all go through a stage of denial. We try to pretend that it didn't really happen. There was a book published about 10 years ago called Sacred Bull, The Inner Obstacles That Hold You Back at Work and How to Overcome Them. It suggests there are some things we do in a work environment that keep us from being more effective. And can you guess what their number one of 10 things that hold people back is? They say we deny. We deny that there are problems when we know that they're clearly there. Our philosophy is, I don't see the problem, therefore it doesn't exist. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done what Peter did, and have you ever denied God? Has there ever been a chance where you've had a chance to stand up for God and you've just kept silent? Or Jesus said, whatever you do for the least of these, you do also for me. Has there been a time where there's a person who wasn't able to speak up for themselves that you probably should have spoken up for and missed the opportunity? All right, this is getting kind of depressing, so let me kind of try to switch gears here and see if I can find something a little more helpful in this to say. Peter reached a turning point where he decided he wasn't going to keep denying Christ. He was going to try to change things. The rooster crowed. And what was the turning point for Peter? Can I answer it? Pardon? Disregard that? Okay. I can deny that it ever existed. I can do that. There was a turning point for Peter. When he wasn't going to not deny Christ anymore, the rooster had crowed, he realized what he had done, and the next verse in that turning point for Peter begins by saying, then Peter remembered. It began with remembering. When Moses is about to give the Ten Commandments to the Israelite people, he prepares them by saying, take care that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. When Jesus and the disciples were eating the dinner the night before, Jesus took some bread and broke it, and he took a cup of wine and he shared it, and he said, do this in remembrance of me. Fred Allen once said, I have a hard time remembering. There are three things especially that I find hard for me to remember. One of them is people's names. The other one is people's faces. And the third one is, I have no idea. It's important to remember. 2 weeks ago, we remembered the life of a saint of the Faith Community Church, a lady by the name of Emma Wilk. Emma had for a while been stationed with her husband in the Washington, D.C. area. And then when he retired from the Air Force, was able to move anywhere in the country that he wanted to move. And so they chose to move around the Columbus area because they wanted to be close to Rickenbacker Air Force Base. I hadn't heard the name Rickenbacker a whole lot recently. And so I got to wondering, that's a pretty unique name. There's got to be a story there, right, behind Rickenbacker. So I did a little bit of research. Do you know who the base is named after? A guy by the name of Eddie Rickenbacker, who was a pilot during World War II, was in a World War I, was in a B-17 that used to fly between South Pacific and Africa. The story I got is he was in an airplane that went down in October 1942. Is that fair? He was in an airplane that went down? 1942? I thought that was World War II. I could be wrong about this. But anyway, he and his flight crew ended up floating in a life raft out in the Pacific Ocean. There are obviously some obstacles that they faced floating in a life raft. There was the sun, there was the weather, but the biggest one that they faced was starvation. They were wondering what they were going to eat. They floated for weeks without anything to eat. And in his diary, one of the things that he talks about is there was a guy who was also a pilot in this crew in the life raft by the name of Cherry. It was a Sunday morning, and so they decided to have a little worship service, and his memoirs read like this. We read the service that afternoon. We finished a prayer for deliverance and a hymn of praise. There was some talk, but it tapered off in the oppressive heat. And so I kind of leaned back. I pulled my hat down over my eyes to keep out some of the glare, and I dozed off. Then something landed on my head, and I knew that it was a seagull. I lifted the rim of my hat just a little bit, and everybody else knew it too. No one said a word, but peering out from under the rim of my hat, without even moving my head, I could see the expression on their faces. They were staring at that seagull, and you know what they were thinking? Dinner. That's our salvation. And the rest, of course, is history. Eventually, they were rescued, and they credit their being able to survive with the seagull. I am told that after he retired from service, he retired in Florida, and every Friday evening, this old man, Eddie Rickenbacker, was said to have been seen walking down towards the seashore until he died in 1973 with a bucket of shrimp. Do you know why? To feed the seagulls. That was his way of remembering what God had done for them, to say thank you for delivering me, what God had done for them out on that lifeboat years before. What do you do that helps you remember? What do you do that helps you remember God? Then we are told Peter went out and he wept bitterly. When he realized what he had done, it broke Peter's heart. What breaks your heart? What do you think breaks God's heart? Are you willing to let the things that break God's heart also break your heart? One of the commentaries that I read on this passage from Scripture for today suggested that the mind is like a bed. It suggested that if a bed is made up, it's not very easy to get into it, is it? That the mind is that way too. When our minds are made up, we tend to be alone because it's really hard to let other people in. Maybe sometimes we need to let our minds and our hearts get unmade so that we can let other people in. Last week I wrote an article for the Xenia Gazette. And one of the things that I did in it is I talked about my next meet that I'm training for now, which is in June, the World Championships. But I quoted a guy by the name of Phillips Brooks. Phillips Brooks is a guy who once said, "Don't pray for lighter burdens, pray for stronger backs." And I suggested that we all need a burden, something that we're willing to take on the strain of. What is your burden? Is it somebody who's being treated unfairly? Or maybe a child? Or maybe a person who's alone? Person who needs to know what it is to be loved? Maybe it's a person that doesn't know the Lord? What is your burden? What is it that you're willing to take on the strain of on behalf of God? Lastly, what did Peter remember? He remembered that Jesus had said, when he predicted that they would deny him, "I will go ahead of you to Galilee." Why would he go to Galilee? What's in Galilee? Do you know? That's where the disciples were. Pardon? Not much, except for the disciples. Or in other words, Jesus not only knew that Peter would deny him, he also knew that eventually he would come to his senses, and God had already, even before Peter denied him, seen a way through it all. So even though we fail God, God does not fail us. Between Jesus' prediction that Peter would deny him and Peter's actual denial, there is Jesus' trial, where he's brought on trial before the Sanhedrin. And I don't think it's any mistake that just like Peter denied Jesus three times, Jesus is also asked three times to deny who he is. Once he's asked, "I heard you say that you were able to destroy the temple of God and to raise it up in 3 days." What do you say to that? Jesus could have denied his mission, but he didn't. Then Jesus is asked, "Tell me if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." And Jesus didn't deny it. He said, "You said so." Then people would strike him and spit on him and say, "Prophesy to us if you are the Messiah. Who is it that struck you?" And again, he resisted the temptation to deny who he is. Just as Peter had denied Jesus three times, Jesus didn't deny who he was. And I think what Matthew is doing is giving us a choice of which way we will live our lives. Will we live our lives saying yes to what we believe, or will we live our lives in denial like Peter? When we do make mistakes, the greatest failure is the failure to learn from it and to see a way through. Failure, I think, can be a blessing if we believe that God is with us through it and has already seen a way through. I remember once we were driving, a summer break, we were driving on vacation down through Alabama and went to a place called Enterprise, Alabama. Have you ever been to Enterprise, Alabama? There is the strangest statue in the middle of town. There is a woman, a statue of a woman, holding a platter, and on the platter she has a boll weevil. Not a bowling ball, a boll weevil. Do you know why? I think the story is that years ago they used to plant cotton in that area. But there was a boll weevil infestation that ruined the cotton crops. And so they had to plant something other than cotton. And so they started planting peanuts instead. And that was before the cotton economy got so difficult that it was hard to maintain a town on cotton. And so now they see the boll weevil as the savior of the town, because even before people started changing from the cotton market, they were able to get their economy more based in a peanut market before they even know what they were doing. And so they now see the boll weevil as the savior of the town. Sometimes failure and misfortune can be a way that God is working to see a way through. After Peter's denial, things keep getting worse for Jesus. He's handed over from Caiaphas to Pilate. Pilate then gives people an out and gives them a choice. Which one do you want to free? This Jesus guy or this other convicted criminal that we have by the name of Barabbas? The people choose to free Barabbas and to crucify Jesus. Failure has consequences. The story for today does not end well. Jesus is mocked, he's beaten, and he's crucified in a day so horrible that even the sun can't watch. The world becomes dark for a period of about 3 hours as Jesus dies. Is there any hope? Well, I'm not going to go there today. You're going to have to come back next week to find that out. Because next week is Easter Sunday, and we find out how the story ends. I said that we all are guilty of denying sometimes. I've got a little video of some people who are sharing some thoughts on denial. Steve, if this works, let's see if we can show the video.